Today is the 6th of February, 2022, Sunday morning, and there's going to be a fellowship call here at the top of the hour, and we'll probably have several people on the call, so we'll be back with you at that time.
When I was watching the cars go by, and man, there was a lot of people that were masked up driving down the street in the car, you know. And then yesterday, I was in town, at the docks, and they got this big building all glassed in, and I'd never been in here, so I went in there, you know. But you know, I'm watching people outside going by with masks on, and it's cold. When you get a north wind blowing down here, you know, right off the ocean, it's cold. And I'm telling you, there's no bugs gonna live in that all day. You know? But anyway, it's. And it's so true, you know, it's so true. I got to remember that today. You know, you can't get serious about this. I mean, there is a time, and we should have some concern. We should have concern but we're all still eating, and we're all still out of the weather. We're all housed, you know,
Yeah, and this is the funny thing, this is a complete irony. You know, I see. 5 to 6 years, some of the most important messages I've gotten were from homeless individuals. I don't want to be homeless, but yet the best messages I ever got were from homeless.
Yeah, I was just curious, John. I forgot what province you're in. Are you in Ontario or Toronto? Both. I've forgotten, John. But
both in Ontario.
Okay. What has been your experience, John, as far as the protests and the truckers in that area where you're at?
I haven't been affected by it because I'm in an area where they're not frequenting.
Okay.
I'm on the west side, almost on the border with Mississauga, so I haven't really been eyewitnessing any of that. I've heard of where they are. They're at the main plazas and malls.
Okay.
But
they're mostly downtown Toronto.
Closest to me would be about 7 kilometers to the south.
Okay. Okay.
By the lake. Close to the lake. I've seen a lot of footage of tractors, you know, so maybe the trucks are in Ottawa and the tractors are in Toronto.
Yeah.
The farmers are getting into it, too.
Okay. What has been the response of, I guess, I don't know the term, like your governor or your premier or state legislature? What's been their response?
That's a good question. I gave up my cable a few months ago, so maybe Adeola can fill in for that.
Yeah, I've just been watching it on online, and to tell you the truth, it's, I mean, on one hand, totally deny what's happening, and on the other ones that there's a lot of political maneuvering. Even there are some protests in front of Rideau Hall, where the Governor General lives, wanting them to basically fire the Prime Minister.
Mm.
So they're not leaving, and they're sitting on, even though they're, the GoFundMe tried to suspend their accounts, they've basically found other alternatives that completely fund the protesters sitting there for some gas, fuels, and everything. So they're not going anywhere.
Okay. And I'd heard, is this true, Adeola, that the same group is going to kind of join hands, and they're going to have a truck crusade from California to Washington D.C. upcoming.
Possibly, I'm not clear on that at all. It won't surprise me at all, personally. I think people are affected to go every trucker to go to the state legislature and just park there for as long as it lasts.
Well, Walt brought up something before you came on, Adeola. He wants to have a discussion about, you know, kind of when we discovered personally the Reformation. And for me personally, I was probably about 35, 36 years old. I mean, I'd shared with Walt, I'd watched a movie like when I was 22, after we were married, I'd watched a movie on Martin Luther, and that gave me just a little bit of tidbits about the conflict between Rome and the Protestants. And then also, I've been getting a lot of, you know, I shouldn't say a lot, but quite some feedback, and I'm not going to mention any names, but of certain people that are very upset over the emphasis on, you know, again, Rome opposed to the Jews, and they keep going back to this chronological thing about the Jews being around before the Jesuits. And, you know, I look at the history of the Reformation, and I don't, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe Walt, maybe you could answer this question. Where were the Zionists in the Reformation?
Well, Zionism wasn't around at the time.
Right, that's my point. And so,
yeah.
I mean, if we go back to the early late 1400s and early 1500s, and even before then with the Anabaptists, they were all pushing back against Rome. The Anabaptists never went into Rome. And so it kind of is, it's kind of amazing how people want to give the Jews all the credit, and, you know, they don't, you know, for having all this power, when I see Roman Catholicism, how many countries they were involved in and how they controlled not only the civil governments in those countries. But anyway, yeah, Adiola, when did you first, what age were you when you first came to understand the Reformation?
I first heard about, I mean, I first, like, read about it in my early 20s, like basically mid-20s. But I didn't really understand the real impact it had until, say, the last 10 years, basically. Like, I just heard about Martin Luther, Tyndale, all these guys. But it's just realizing the real impact it had up until the last 10 years. That was just the difference with me.
I got you. Well, Tom made a really good point. And I'm going to bring it out because I think it's something that needs to be brought out. In that video I sent out, the link to that video, Tom commented that the moderator of that video spent a lot of time about talking about how the Reformation had been hidden and so on. And Tom said, you know, the truth of the gospel has always been revealed to God's elect since time immemorial. You know, in other words, even in the Old Testament, God revealed to his elect himself, even through the prophets Isaiah. You know, look at all the messianic prophecies that were foretelling of Christ coming. And so, Tom, maybe you could address that a little bit, kind of your concerns over the overemphasis of the fact that, you know, that just because the history was hidden doesn't mean that God didn't reveal himself to his people. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, well, my understanding is that, and I hadn't even thought about the Old Testament. That's a very, very good point. Was that the Church of Jesus Christ has always been, and it's always been separate. And, yeah, they've been by different names. I can think of the Donatists, the Waldenses, and there's the Albigenses or Albigenses, however you pronounce it, the Huguenots and, you know, and so forth. But his truth is always there, and his truth has always been revealed to his saint, to his elect. And I don't believe that they were ever part of the Roman Catholic Church, you know, and until then, when Martin Luther and all that, when they tried to reform it, and bring out the truth of God's word. So that was just my concern, because he was, the narrator was just saying that it all focuses on the Reformation. But, like, you know, before we even heard of the Reformation, God had revealed his truth in predestination and all this other stuff. So yes, the Reformation is an important event. We can't ignore it, but yet it's not, I don't think it's the, his, anyway, his truth has always been there.
Yeah, and it's a really good point. In fact, the moderator even brought it out that the original intent of Martin Luther was to reform reform the Catholic Church, and then once he went to Rome, I think he came to the conclusion that it was unreformable. Okay.
Yes.
But his original intent, and by the way, that was Calvin's original intent. Originally, it was to reform the Roman Catholic Church and several of the other people, but once they saw how corrupt and how evil and how sinister it was, they could no longer be a part of it. And God did use the reformers in a mighty way. And I mean, even people like Huss was burned at the stake for his faith. And we know about Tyndale, and we know about how that the Reformation brought in through the printing press, Gutenberg's printing press, it brought the Bible to the common people, which was wonderful that to the sovereignty of God, that God ordained that. So.
You know say John, I'd like to have your when the first time the Reformation came in your vocabulary.
As far as I can remember, I think it might have been before high school. You know, just in school, you know, generally talking about the Protestant Reformation, but not really knowing anything deeply about it. Okay. I started to get deep on it when I started listening to you back at the beginning of 2014, spring of 2014. That's really when I grasped it. You know, all I knew before that was that a few people that were outnumbered by the Catholic Church left the Catholic Church.
Well, see, I was raised in a Lutheran church, and you were raised Catholic, and I started realizing this when I watched it. You know, I wasn't given my roots. Wasn't given the roots of it, because the Reformation, you know, I believe it was John Wycliffe that was called the Morning Star. Is that right, Adeola?
Yeah.
Who was and what was his era?
I can't remember.
That was pretty much the late 1500s, I believe.
Yeah. I think so. I just can't remember the exact dates, but he was.
I think it was in the 1400s. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably early, late 1400s, early 1500s. You're probably right. Yeah.
You know, because what I'm saying is that Luther kind of caused it to explode. You know.
Yeah.
It's because the printing press came out at the same time.
Yeah,
and he started printing pamphlets and such, you know. But
we can't forget the Waldensians in this.
Yeah. Tom said, there was groups that never did connect with Rome. I mean, you know, in other words, you know, really, I thought the. The documentary was right in this. We sometimes don't see what it really caused out in the workplace and it caused the 30-year war. It almost destroyed. I mean, it was a bloodbath in Europe, you know, the reason I bring this up, Larry, is, you know, that statement, you know, I think about the founding of America, you know, and sometimes it might get a little bit, you know, people don't understand it, you know, that was counter-reformation, see, the American Revolution and the founding of Canada was counter-reformation,
Yeah, it was really interesting last night on the Bible study. Robert brought up something that I had thought about, but I had never really considered it in depth. He said that he was visiting with his father, and a friend of his father had come over, and they were talking about how God reveals himself to us, different things in our lives, and this friend of his father was stating that he had all of these experiences that he'd had. He was associated with John MacArthur and had gone to Master's College. And, you know, as you know, one of the big thrusts of Master's College, one of their big, I guess you would call their focus, is to deal with people who've come out of the Roman Catholic Church, okay? And, you know, what Robert stated was that after him going through all of this and going through the Master's College and getting a theological degree and everything associated with it, he said, I finally had to realize that my relationship with Christ was not based upon my relationship with other people, including Master's College or John MacArthur or anybody else. My relationship with Christ was based upon my relationship with Christ, okay? And he said it was kind of, his conscience, I don't know all the details, but anyway, it was brought up about the scripture that says if you don't hate your father and mother, you're not worthy of me. In other words, if you put anything above Christ, that's idolatry. And so I thought it was a real interesting discussion. And of course, we know that Christ didn't mean literally hate your father and mother. What he meant was, you know, and in that passage we were studying, it was talking about how Christ identified who his disciples were, and he told them, come and follow me, and they just immediately dropped everything. They dropped their nets. I mean, these are fishermen. They dropped their nets, all their tools, their trade, and went and followed Christ. And so I think a lot of people are following, following a lot of institutions and organizations, and they're wanting the acceptance of those organizations and institutions, and only God can bring them to the point where the only thing that's really important is their relationship with Christ. Looks like we've had some other people join us. Walt, who's come on board?
George,
okay, good. Welcome aboard, George.
Well, thank you, Larry. Thank you, Walt. Thank you, Adioli. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tori, and whoever else might be with us. I'm sorry, I had to leave in just a moment because I have a prior engagement. So do you mind if I just end on this one note?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I was just looking this up because I was looking at something else because a couple things. I know Walt, hello, Walt, I know we haven't spoken directly recently, but perhaps we can talk this week. Somebody brought this to my attention. There's an ancient Roman holiday that took place between the 13th of February and February the 13th, basically Valentine's Day. It was called Lupercalia. Now, until recently, I had never heard of this, and it was known as a time of sacrifice, because the ancient Romans wanted to appease their various deities. And probably one of the most famous examples of one of these rituals taking place recently was in 1945, almost 77 years ago, in Dresden, Germany. So between the 13th, as I said, on those dates, between the 13th of February and February the 15th, hundreds of U.S. and Royal Air Force planes bombed the snot out of Dresden. Now, how many people actually died in these bombings? I'm not sure. The low figure is 25,000. The high figure is hundreds of thousands. Now, what was unusual about this raid was, one, Dresden was not a military target. It had no strategic value whatsoever. It was soldiers in the East who were recuperating would go there to convalesce. And as I said, most people don't know about this. Now, Dresden wasn't the only German city to be bombed. Dozens, like Hamburg, Dusseldorf, various other Bremen and Bremenhaven, were completely leveled. So, anyhow, I just thought I'd share this little factoid with you, since this is that date is coming up this weekend.
Yeah, and when did this happen, George?
1945. So you're talking, well, almost 77 years ago to the day.
Wow. No, I'd never heard of it.
Now, for what it's worth, Dresden was a Protestant city. It was one of the, it was one of the major players, during the first 30 years war back in the 17th century. Now I know Wallace has brought this up. What we used to call East Germany, which was in existence from roughly 1945 to 1990, was historically Protestant and for the part Lutheran.
Yeah, Tom, you've had your hand up. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to touch on what you mentioned about John MacArthur and that's I couldn't agree more, and that's why I hate the term Calvinist. Right. I am not a Calvinist. In fact, I appreciate a lot of his writings. I don't agree with everything. In fact, my understanding of Scripture, I look at him more as a closer to Arminian with a lot of his views. it's amazing on how that term just gets thrown out there. You're a Calvinist. I'm not. I'm a believer in Christ. That's it. I hate terms. I hate terminology. And so forth. And I wanted to welcome Mike this morning as well. I see you.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tom. I have struggled. You know, so many people don't understand that Calvin represented a lot of things that, you know, most people that I talk to, when they ask me if I'm a Calvinist, what they really want to know is, do I believe in TULIP again? Okay. And I think that you and I, Tom, would agree that we have no problem with what TULIP stands for, the total depravity, right, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, the final perseverance of the saints. But Calvin, like Tom is saying, you know, his position on civil government, his position on a lot of things, especially the sacraments, and, you know, and even Luther's position, we can get into the co-substantiation versus transubstantiation. But, you know, I'm with Tom. If someone asks me if I'm a Calvinist, I'll say, no, let me explain to you what I agree with Calvin on. Okay? And also, if they are interested in knowing what I disagree with Calvin about. Yeah. So thanks for sharing that, Tom. And George, thanks for, what is the name of this holiday?
Lupercalia, it means day, basically, the celebration of the wolf, lupus. Lupus,
wow.
Because according to Roman mythology, ancient Rome was founded by Remus and Romulus in year, 753 BC? So you're talking over 2,800 years ago. And, there are two twins who actually morphed into St. Peter and St. Paul about 1,000 years later. They were supposed to have founded the ancient city of Rome, as I said, in 753 BC. Mm. And they were both orphans, and they were raised by a wolf.
Wow.
according to Roman legend.
Interesting.
So, your
presupposition. I want to make sure I understand. So, the spiritual implications were that Dresden was a Protestant, kind of a city, and so that was the spiritual implications as to why they were attacked. Is that what I'm hearing?
It's cool. Okay. Well, yes, this is somewhat complicated. If you want to read more about this, actually Kurt Vonnegut in his book, 1969 book, details this, the Slaughterhouse film, or Slaughterhouse 5, which actually made into film in the early 1970s, because Vonnegut was actually there. He was an army engineer who had captured him the previous December in Belgium during the German counteroffensive of the Ardennes Force, better known as the Battle of the Bulge. So he spent the last 6 months or so of the war at a German POW camp. And as I said, he was in Dresden during the bombing. And he was one of the first Americans to actually come out and say, hey, what had actually happened? Now, immediately, this is essentially covered up. They said, oh, only a few thousand Germans were killed. And he said, no. Probably at least 100,000, perhaps hundreds of thousands of Germans were killed. Now, Vonnegut, who lived from 1922 to 2007, actually, as I said, he was captured during the Battle of the Bulge. And it was somewhat interesting because the train that he was on was actually scraped by the Royal Air Force, the RAF. And of the 600 prisoners on the train, 150 of whom were killed by the Royal Air Force. So, if you read any of Vonnegut's writings, he tended to be somewhat jaundiced. He volunteered for the U.S. Army, and he was very much pro-war. But after the war, he became very much of a pacifist.
Well, you know, I've heard historical accounts of contemporary figures that had experience with not only their grandparents, but also some experiences as young children with what happened in Germany with the, you know, whenever the Allied armies came over, these German soldiers tried to surrender, and they were shot. They were killed. They were lined up and killed, thousands of them. And now it's coming out. It's a matter of, you know, military history. And it's available through the Freedom of Information Act. But the whole idea was the Allied soldiers were told, take no prisoners. You know, just kill them. And this is absolutely a violation of you know, military law. When someone surrenders, you're not supposed to just kill them. You're supposed to take them. And this is starting to come out, you know. And I know very little bit about it. I've just started exploring a little bit. Walt may be able to enlighten us a little bit more about. I know he's done a little bit more research on this than I have.
Well, I'm not an expert in it, but Dresden was of course the first sign, you know, because what we're talking about here, and we got Mike and George's comments is when, see, what I've learned over the years is how little history that all of us have. It's not just me. You know, history wasn't talked about. The only thing that I knew about World War II was from Hollywood, you know. and the reason that I asked the question, I'm going to ask you the question, Mike. When was the first time that the word, that the Reformation came into your vocabulary? I mean, when were you exposed? Were you taught this in high school, or when was the first time you knew anything about the Reformation?
It wasn't until after I got saved, which would have been 8 years ago.
And what did you learn about the Reformation?
Just the typical story of Martin Luther nailing the 95 theses to the Wittenberg Chapel doors and protesting the indulgences the Catholic Church was involved in.
When was the first time you learned of the Inquisition? That 68 over, like the Fox's Book of Martyrs, that, you know, that book has a figure of 68 million people were killed in the Inquisition. When was the first time you heard about the Inquisition?
You know, I mean, that would have been something I stumbled upon in my own reading. I mean, I couldn't say the date. You know, but back when I was a kid in school, you know, it wasn't taught in school, that's for sure.
Say, George, when did you learn of the Inquisition? How old were you?
I'm sorry, I had to step out for a second. So was your question, when did I learn about the Inquisition?
Yes, when did it become in your vocabulary that you understood what it was? Who was behind it?
You know, I'm 53 almost, I'm 52 almost 53. I'm going to be turning 53 on the 22nd of this month. And I had to say, in 1981, when I was about 12 years old, when I saw the Mel Brooks film, History of the World, Part 1. I'm not being facetious,
You're being honest.
So you're talking over 40 years ago. There's a scene in the movie where they're talking about the Spanish, they're talking about the Inquisition. They don't identify the Spanish Inquisition, the Spanish one. There's a really tacky song where the Inquisition, I know you're wishing we would go away, but it's here and it's here to stay.
No, that's, George, hold your thought there. That's not the point for bringing this up. The point that I realize is we haven't been taught any true history. See, history is left out of our, you know, it's amazing. Because if we knew history, if people knew history today, and we understood the Reformation, we'd know who was behind the pandemic.
Well, you know, case in point, you know, I know we've talked about the American medical face of the corona hoax is Anthony Stephen Fauci, who was born in 1940. He got his undergrad degree from Holy Cross, and he went to Regis High School in Manhattan, New York. Now, so Tony was at least double-dipped. His wife, Christine Grady, was triple-dipped. She got her undergrad and PhD from Georgetown University and her master's degree from Boston College. As a matter of fact, both Tony and his wife Christine last year on the 20th of May received the Agorium Megorium, or how you say it, for the Greater Glory of God Award from Georgetown University. So, Fauci, as I said, is the American medical face of the Crumbs. But this has not been his first rodeo. He's been with the National Institutes of Health since 1968, so over half a century. He was a major player in the cancer fraud in the 1970s and later the AIDS fraud of the 1980s. So people call Fauci basically the medical John Edgar Hoover. Now, Hoover was ostensibly Protestant. He grew up Lutheran, and he was a member of a Presbyterian church in D.C., but he was a 33rd degree Freemason. He was a York Rite Freemason, and he received at least 15 honorary degrees from various Catholic institutions, including Georgetown and Notre Dame. Also, there are allegations he was like a Knight of Malta of some sort. Now, for what it's worth, in 1964, Hoover received the Sword of Loyola from St. Louis University. And just to give you the context of Hoover, he lived from 1895 to 1972, and he ran the FBI from 1924 until his death. So almost half a century. So you could say that Hoover was basically a legal inquisitor, and Fauci is a medical inquisitor. There's a reason, you know, I'm sorry.
George?
Yes.
Walt, who just asked a question. Could you repeat the question, Walt?
Well, no. It's you know the you know the what I realize is how little, you know, in a culture, in a world, how little that we know we understand the Reformation, and the point I want to talk about is two years ago, Larry and I interviewed Dave Baxter. We did a an interview, and it was Dave Baxter and also Larry, you know, when we were watching those documentaries, they never did mention, that America was counter-reformation.
Well, you know, I think a lot of the challenge that a lot of people have when you start talking about the Inquisition is there's several, you know, there's two definitions. There is a secular definition, which says it's a period of prolonged and intensive questioning. I can relate to that. Okay. That was, you know,
24 hours straight.
Yeah, I've been the subject of a period of prolonged and intensive questioning. That's Inquisition, but the ecclesiastical definition, interesting, says an ecclesiastical tribunal established by Pope Gregory the Ninth in 1232 for the suppression of heresy. It was active chiefly in northern Italy and southern France, becoming notorious for the use of torture. In 1542, the papal Inquisition was reestablished to combat Protestantism, eventually becoming an organ of papal government. The Inquisition, in historical ecclesiastical terminology, referred to the Holy Inquisition, a group of institutions within the Catholic Church whose aim was to combat heresy, conducting trials of suspected heretics, of those coming against Rome, and supporting the Protestant faith. And so the reason I'm bringing that up is that, you know, I can tell you something happened last week, and I haven't even had a chance to talk to Walt about this, but after Walt's broadcast, I mean, everything broke loose. I mean, I'm surprised that I'm on any platform left. To start with, when I tried to put it on brand new tube, I still haven't been able to put it on there. Every time I try to put it on there, they reject it. Okay.
Tell the title.
Help me out, Walt. Roman Catholic Deniers. Okay. By Walt Stickle. Roman Catholic Deniers by Walt Stickle.
The thing of it is, I realize when you make a statement, and I have more than once, and because of listening to those two documentaries on the Reformation, it proves to me myself, at the founding of this country, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Now listen, I'm thankful, you know, I've never had my door broken down or, you know, we can still, you know, that's coming to an end. you know, it's the pandemic. The pandemic is, you know, they are still pressing for that shot. That shot ain't going to go away. And in other words, the very thing that the Reformation revolted against, because they didn't want the government telling them what to do.
Well, I honestly think the only reason that your video was not put on was I don't think they like Walt Stickel's name. No, I'm just kidding. I think you're getting a name.
Stickel is a German name.
Yeah. The other thing is, and then, Adiola has his hand up here, but also the other thing that happened is the same thing happened on BitChute. Okay. And so I finally was able to get it on BitChute after uploading it three different times. I had to change some things on there. But brand new tube is still rejecting it, even to this day. Go ahead, Adiola.
And I said, Larry, I thought my stuff was going to be controversial. What I was talking about.
Well, you know, I think it's maybe Adiola Sogbine. That name, you know, doesn't hold as much resentment yet. Just hold on a little bit longer, Adiola. You'll be in the same can as Walt Stickel, okay?
Okay. No, I'm saying, man, like, I just pulled four things up, and all of a sudden, I think we get some real, especially the ones that hit the, how communism got started.
Well, you did get a lot of, you did get some significant pushback on that. And one of the people that, I'm not going to mention any names, but he asked the question in one of his podcasts, referring to your podcast, he asked the question, how can anyone ever come to the conclusion that the Jesuits preceded the Jews? Back to this whole argument again, okay?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to let you right now, Adiola, answer that question. How did you ever come to the conclusion that communism was started by the Jesuits when the Jews were around a long time before the Jesuits? Now, you've got a good answer to that, and it has to do with the name of Napoleon, but why don't you give just a brief answer on that?
Well, it was something that always preceded me, whereas it's like, how did it get started? In simply understanding, at the time of Jesus Christ, where God's own people used the Roman power, in fact, the government is to snare him and the apostles. Yeah. At the same time, God gave a warning in Luke chapter 21. The moment you see basically the Roman army account of Jerusalem, his people take off. That literally happened in 70 AD, virtually destroying Jerusalem as it is. Were there Jews there? Yes, but now it became Palestine. What we know is Palestine, like today, before World War II. And from that virtually eliminated that question right there. Number two, understanding the role of the Khazari Empire and how the descendants of Israel are descended from what you see today, the state of Israel, are descendants from that group. Facts are Facts is a... it's an ebook. So, and then when I came to understand the Jesuit order and how utterly nefarious this group is, and then until I read that book, History of the Jesuits by Nicolini, and it talked about communism in a previous podcast that I spoke about. I said, you couldn't get this form of communism anywhere else. How did Karl Marx get the idea of communism? His confessor was Pierre Elliott de Smet. He went, if you look at it, his education, he was educated by either educated or heavily influenced by the Jesuit order. He couldn't make this up on his own. Secondly, who did the Jesuits influence? If you look at every country they've ever started, it's either civil war, or they take over and effectively with communism. Just look at, if you want to see today, just look at North Korea. What we're seeing in North Korea is what Jesuits is all about. What's really Jesuits is all about, because you can talk to anybody who's ever escaped from North Korea, they personally have no clue what's outside their own borders. I mean, everything beyond their own history is basically illegal. I mean, just, and this is why I decided to bring that book out. Because really, we're always complaining where it started. They always talk about Karl Marx, but they never talk about the reductions in Paraguay. They never talk about this. And if they do, it's always something in very layman terms. But if you actually read what they're doing, if their own Catholic Church had to turn around under the guise of all these other countries, if the Catholic Church, under the Pope who expelled them, had to look at what they were doing, that's something serious. With the fall in Jerusalem, look at Napoleon. He was the one who started this. And it was carried on. It was carried on with the Schofield Bible, everything. It all started with Napoleon. And the question you gotta ask yourself, why the Crusades, why is that they're always going after Jerusalem for? Why was the papacy always going after Jerusalem when the Crusades started?
I received some correspondence from an individual that made the assertion that the Antichrist would eventually be a Jewish pope. Okay. Now, you know, where he gets that idea, I mean, nothing would surprise me, you know. I mean, here's the problem. Back to the term Jew, okay? The synagogue of Satan who say they're Jews and they are not. And we have to look at the establishment, like Adeola was saying, you know, why was the state of Israel established? Why did they go in there and literally rob and pilfer the land that was owned by the Palestinians? Everybody knows I am not a supporter of the state of Israel. I am a supporter of the Palestinians right now, anyway. And I do not uphold Zionism. That being said, you know, are we gonna totally, and I'm talking from a biblical perspective now, are we gonna totally eliminate all of the prophecies found in the book of Revelation, in the book of Daniel, in the book of all the way through the Old Testament regarding what has happened with Babylon and Rome? And we know what happened with the Roman Church. We know, we have the history of the Roman Church. You know, Paul preached at Rome. I don't think there's any historical record of Peter ever going to Rome, even though the Catholic Church says he's their first pope. The point is, though, that Paul taught at the church at Rome. Something happened after the demise of the apostles to the church at Rome. And they began to lord it over all the other churches. And John, it's good to see you actually in live camera there. It's good to see you.
I was having lunch when you guys were conferencing.
Okay.
Well, hey, Larry, let me just make a point on that.
Yes.
What you're saying is you have to look at, it was the fact that they couldn't do anything. Like, as long as the apostles were alive, they couldn't do anything. It was a moment that it was literally the moment that the Apostle Paul, John, died. Then there was this huge sort of discrepancy. There was like, they couldn't say anything. Because out of the apostles, at the time Jesus Christ died, there were 500 individuals that were witness of Jesus Christ going up into heaven, like literally. So if one looks at it, they couldn't do nothing. All these people were alive because they were literally first-hand accounts. The moment they all died, then this sort of influence started to happen. It wasn't until 300 AD when Rome split in Eastern and Western Rome, and there was a Western Rome that actually began to do this, all this nefarious stuff after 300 AD. And especially when Rome fell, pagan became Rome papal. It was during that time, and the domination of Constantine was a complete forgery at the exact same time. So, maybe seen the Civil Power by R.W. Thompson, just gives an excellent review on that. Like from that time all the way down to this time, personally.
I have a question for Walt. Walt, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Walt, what is it that drives you or motivates you or propels you to continue to take a defiant stand against Rome even as we speak?
Well, you know, I had another, when I watched those two documentaries on the Reformation, one of the things that I hold to, and it actually brought it out in one of those videos, is the founding of North America. See, I mean, in other words, I mean, the United States is modern Babylon. I mean, we have a basilica in our capital with an obelisk in front of it. I mean, there isn't any separation of church and state, because the videos also brought up, you see that. I mean, I learned some things I really can't teach. America is a modern day. It's Rome resurrected. You know, when I went through Iowa one time, and I looked, and I went around, and I was bouncing down the freeway and I looked down this one road, you might call it an off ramp. It's a road that goes to, there was the capital of Iowa. This was years ago, and all of a sudden I said, "Well, there's where it's coming from. I'm by myself. See, I said, you know, I could see the Roman architect." And like our country has got, we got 50 capital buildings, and 46 of them are basilicas. It's a Roman architect. Our school system, our medical profession, you know. But and then the Bible. Revelation 17, and the beast is Rome. It's not an individual, one person. It's the papacy. It's a group. It's a system.
Well, it reminds me of the song. There's a song I used to like. It goes like this: I'll go to my grave loving you, loving you. And Walt's song is, I'll go to my grave fighting you, fighting you.
Okay. Well, you know, and I'm not fighting,
because
Let me just explain.
Go ahead.
I'm not criticizing you for opposing the beast. I mean, who am I to criticize you for opposing the beast? Okay, now Tom's had his hand up a long time. Tom, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I've appreciated today, and as usual, I greatly appreciated the fellowship. It was good seeing Mike again and John and everybody here. I hope you all have a good week, and Lord willing, I'll see you tonight, Larry.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that, and it's good seeing Tori, and Rosette really enjoys your fellowship with anyway, so you all have a good afternoon, you know, Tom. We love you.
Yes,
and I'll see you tonight.
Okay.
All right.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Well, because Larry, you kind of brought up as time goes on, you get older, you know, and I even have to ask myself the same question you asked me myself. I mean, but I'm not thinking with emotion, I'm thinking with evidence. When I look at that Capitol building in Washington, D.C., and see that big obelisk, and plus I've got a book on the obelisk, you know, and there's so much evidence that we're sitting right in the middle of Babylon.
Oh, I totally agree with you, and I didn't mean to. It wasn't meant to be an attack. It was meant to
No,
get,
no, oh, I know it. No,
but,
no,
you know, it's like, because I get probably, you know, Walt, you already know this, but I don't know how many people, you know, want to take out their frustrations on Larry about Walt. And I'm thinking, look, if you got a problem with Walt, call Walt. Okay. How many people have you know, emailed me and said, you know, why is Walt always on this rant about the Roman Catholics? You know, can't he get on another track? You know, I mean, and I've had people say, you know, Walt is representing some kind of Protestant group or something that's coming to this Rome? And so I just defer to him. I say, hey, you need to email Walt and ask your questions. I'm not responsible for Walt's actions. Okay. Now, again, I have not opposed Walt. You know, I am guilty in helping him publish two books now and put them, you know, and sometimes Walt may not be real happy about that. It's all come to fruition, okay?
Especially with my name on the front cover.
So, anyway.
But listen, you know, this is a book. This is book one. And, you know, I didn't write this book. I did not write this book. You know, but...
That's a major disclaimer, everybody. That's a disclaimer, okay? So,
well, I did all the picture work in there. I took the book, and the author who wrote this book has refuted it. He wrote a book refuting the whole book because his main source for this book was Hislop's book, The Two Babylons. But if you go into this book and you read, there's 20 chapters in this book. I mean, it paints a clear picture of Rome. It tells you about the cookie. It tells you about the obelisk. It tells you about their relics. It tells you about Christmas. It tells you about Easter. You know, and see. You see, the reason why this book stuck out is because John Daniel, the author of The Grand Design Exposed, my webpage, this very book has inspired him to write the book. You know, to write his book, and he was just a construction worker. He didn't have a computer. It took him 10 years to you know, he wrote that with a pencil and pen, and then had somebody else, you know, and you know, but the thing of it is, what, as I get older, and I realize with the internet, this internet really changed us. It changed all. It changed the way we do, you know, the way people communicate. And you know, I realize why my ex-wife and my daughter and my son, they don't want no part of me. Because the world is, it's not me. The world changes people. When kids go to Disneyland, don't you think for a minute that that doesn't change them? They are in the Magic Kingdom. And that's where we are today. We are, I mean, I realize that, you know, you know, and I'm not angry at Larry, you know, but I say to myself, did I put this book together? No, it was Larry that did it. No, Larry didn't do it. He didn't do that. I mean, you realize that, like this book here, this book here, let me comment about the cover. The picture on this book is in a book written in 1888 by Justin Fulton. And, in other words, and this book here is just a collection of some of the books I wrote. I mean, that I read, some of the authors. I counted them up the other day. There's 9 different authors in this book. You know, 9 different authors. And they all agree on one thing. They understand about the obelisk, and they understand who runs of Washington D.C. I mean, you know, and I'll tell you something. I got else to share this with you. I can't watch. I couldn't watch a video with Joe Biden on it or Donald Trump. Donald Trump. I graduated. That was my graduate work with Donald Trump. I mean, it's nothing but a show, and he's not, you know, Donald Trump is not even a good actor, you know, and anyway, but I thank you for sharing, because one of the things this morning is because of Larry's, I watched those documentaries, because it was kind of interesting. I got an email from Larry, and I just finished one on the Reformation that was an hour and 35 minutes. And I think the one Larry sent me was about an hour and 10 minutes, but it was saying exactly the same thing, you know, and it shows you know, what the Reformation caused. People died. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it caused and everything that we see, if it wasn't for the Reformation, you know, we wouldn't have the Bible. And why do we adhere? We don't want to get jabbed in the arm with a shot. Why is it so? I don't have to talk John into it or Mike into it or Larry. I mean, we don't need that shot. It's ridiculous. Why is it? Is it because we're so intelligent? No, anyway. No, it's the hand of God, you know, in what's going on today. And, you know, I saw one of the
signs of the, one of the gals that was with a trucker up in, Ontario. And she had a sign, which was unusual. She said, "Been jabbed twice, been jabbed enough. Enough is enough." Okay. And so she had already taken the jab twice, but she's seeing the reality of that she'd been bamboozled. You know, a lot of people that have taken the shot now realize they have been lied to. And especially after getting a lot of side effects and illness as a result of it. And yet the science people are still saying, oh no, that had nothing to do with it. See, you can only lie to people for so long and they start rejecting it. And that's what's happening across the world. People are rejecting this. And so, I just want to, you know, in my part of the conversation today, we've been going, you know, about an hour and a half. I would like to refer everybody to ask people in your spare time to read the 42nd chapter of Job, because it's very enlightening, as it relates to even what we're talking about today. Job had gone through all of this. He lost his family. He lost his cattle. He lost all of his materialism. He lost everything. And then in the 42nd chapter of Job, God placed it in the hearts of all of his relatives to come back to him. They softened their hearts. And the relatives are talking to him and they're saying, we're so sorry for all the evil that God has brought upon you. Okay, that's exactly what it says. Read it. We're sorry for all the evil God has brought upon you. Now, all of Job's friends, the three friends that came to him, they were of no comfort to him at all. And in the end, God required his friends to sacrifice, make a sacrifice, because he didn't like what they told Job either. So read the 42nd chapter of Job, because what it will show us is that even though we don't like the reality that God is, you know, it's just like Jerry Maurer used to say, I didn't agree with Jerry Maurer on a lot of things, but I did agree with Jerry Maurer on this. You know, I asked Jerry Maurer, what do you think about people who get all upset when you start talking about God being sovereign over evil? And he said, well, if God didn't authorize it, who did? If God didn't authorize it, who did authorize it? Okay, because if Satan was the author of evil, then Satan's God. That's the reality of it. And so everything that's going on in our world, in our culture, in our society right now, it's all ordained by God. Everything is ordained by God, including the beast. Why do you think we got the book of Revelation to give us this forewarning to God's elect as to what is going to happen? And so that's my thought. I really highly encourage you to read the 42nd chapter of Job. I've really enjoyed this fellowship. I'm glad to see Mike is here with us. And Adiola, I really enjoyed your last broadcast with me. I learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to your upcoming broadcast on archaeology, because I'm not a student at all of archaeology. John, it's good to see your face. You know, it's been a long time. I think I saw you one other time, and it's good to put a face with a name, you know. And
Larry, you're still okay.
Well, I'm glad, you know, I hope that continues. I hope, you know, I hope you continue to believe that. But, and Walt, it's good to see you this morning too. And we're glad to be with you guys. Does anybody have any further things to add before by the way, this, about half of this was recorded today. I'm having to cut down the recordings a little bit because it gets to be somewhat cumbersome to get them all on the, I've got 69 minutes recorded. So anyway, I'll turn it back to Walt.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times we've stuck on here, and And it's, you know, Mike, he's a real talker with you. I'm just kidding.
Mike is,
I know I can get a grin out of you.
Well, Mike is smart. He knows when not to talk. He doesn't talk when we know the recording's going, but as soon as I'm off, he opens up. Now that's called being smart.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna go take Rosette and Mark for a little ride. They've got all the 7 inches of snow cleared out, so it's warming up.
That's good.
So we love you guys. We'll talk again soon. And goodbye for now. Goodbye for now.
Bye bye. Love you. Love you. Love you. Bye, Bill.
See you. Yeah. See you, John. Okay, so we're going to eat now, right?
Yes. Yeah.